everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously.
Nope.
And who has not even smiled once so far.
No, it's not one of those today. Days.
Do we need to bring in the joke book?
Yeah.
We have a book of puns around here somewhere. Yeah. I could let you borrow.
Man, I was just so, my parents were so mad at me my whole youth because every time there was a Scholastic book fair, I'd make a beeline to the 101 best yada 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 jokes, 101 best cow jokes, 101 best school jokes. And I would come home and my parents would be like, we specifically didn't give you money for the Scholastic book fair. Where did you find the money for this? I'm like, I beg, borrowed, and stole.
Knock, knock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's paying off all these years later. Now mm-hmm. you have a hit comedy podcast. Mm-hmm,
exactly. I'm paying my parents back $7.99 at a time.
Well, that's nice. I always made a beeline for the Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah.
So this is really, it's making a lot of sense how this mm-hmm. podcast came together, mm-hmm. actually. Yep. Goosebumps is still a big deal.
As a book, as a series, as a brand. Okay, it's a universe. There's a universe yeah. associated with it.
Oh, it is
okay.
a universe. It is interesting. It's the Steiniverse.
Steiniverse. Okay.
The Steiniverse. Yep. And all the libraries, like in Chicago and here, like they're all there's huge Goosebump sections and like things hanging from the ceilings and stuff. And
wow,
just go nuts for it. It's great. Good for RL.
Can't wait for Disney to buy the Steiniverse and combine it with like. An Avatar or something. I just, you know.
I would like to see those blue little guys
Navi.
get eaten by plant monsters in the basement.
Absolutely.
I'd be in for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the Navi shows up and he has a ventriloquist dummy for some reason. You're like, oh, I know how this one ends up.
Night of the Living Dummy is a good one. What was the one with the mask? There was one that was like a mask.
I don't know if it was a purple
Jim
mask.
Carrey one was a mask. Yeah, yeah. Like the haunted mask or something. I don't know which one ripped off which one, mm-hmm. but what a treasure. Anyway, anything else you want to talk about besides Goosebumps books?
No. I am slowly developing the after effects of a pretty severe concussion I just received maybe 40 minutes ago, something like that.
Do you want to talk about what happened?
I can talk about what I remember happening.
Okay. That's about it.
We were at softball practice and a ball caromed off of a wall and hit me right in the back of the head about as hard as possible to the point where like the entire practice stopped and just looked at me. I'm like, oh shit, I'm bleeding, aren't I?
So let me get your dead father off the field, please.
So that's all like slowly spreading. Like it hurts a lot back here, but now it's starting to hurt up here and okay. I'm starting to feel a little nauseous. So
have you gone, do you want to go to the hospital? We could break, we could pause.
I don't think so. Like, what are you going to give me like a cast for my head or something?
Yeah. I don't know. Probably.
Sense. There's no like medicine for concussions. They're like,
that's true.
They're like, hey, don't do it again. I'm like, yeah, I didn't plan on doing it the first time, buddy.
Well, this is good. We'll do this. We'll make it a long episode mm-hmm. to keep you awake.
Right.
Make sure you don't fall asleep.
I think it's an old wives' tale. I think really do. Is I think it? It's an old wives' tale.
Right, let's find out.
Because really, like if you were to get a concussion and then fall asleep and then the sweet release of death comes, I mean, is that the worst thing?
I don't think that means that that's an old wives' tale, though. I think that just means that the concern about it being true is maybe overblown.
Yeah.
The concern part. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if your eyes droop and you lean forward and you conk out, do you want me to call Amy? Or? Hey,
let's see. Are we dilated? That one good?
No, yeah, it's pretty good. That's fine. That one. Yeah, this is horrific. Yeah, that's good.
That's good too. Okay,
that's pretty good. I guess let's just do that every 10 minutes just
that's
to
all,
make sure.
That's all they were going to do at the hospital. I don't know why everybody wants to go to the hospital.
All right, what a treat for our YouTube listeners today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, then I guess we should just get into the ghost story before you become the ghost. let's see. We can't yet, though, because first I have to announce to you that we are once again sponsored by Smart Labels.
Oh, thank God.
We have moved out of the autumnal organizational season, and now it is the holiday season. The time when you need smart labels more than ever before. Mm-hmm. I know we say this every time, but this time it's real.
This time you need even more than last time.
This time you need way more. What happens when you put away your Thanksgiving curtains?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? This episode comes out, the day before Thanksgiving? You're about to put those Thanksgiving curtains away for another year.
Yeah, you're about to shove them under the couch and forget about them. And in a year, you're going to be like, where did I shove the Thanksgiving curtains after I was so disgusted at Uncle Mel coming over? And you'll think, where did I put them? And then you open up the smart labels and you'll see the little label that says under the couch dummy. And you'll be like, under the couch dummy. Okay.
And you'll see the extra little note that says, but do not open. Uncle Mel's dead body is wrapped up inside. Please leave for next tenants.
Thank God we got the sleeper couch. That's all I got to say.
And smart labels can help keep track of that. When you've got dead bodies of your family piling up after Thanksgiving, you're going to want to keep them organized. You want to know who's where, which body goes in which crawl space. Really important to keep that in mind.
Also, just to kind of protect the smart labels people a little bit legally, you may want to use a code word for dead body, just in case. Ooh. Just so that, in case the law comes knocking, the smart labels people don't have to answer a whole lot of uncomfortable questions. We're looking out for them, too.
Yeah, and I guess we should say in that spirit, we don't condone you murdering your family after Thanksgiving. No, definitely not. That's not something that we would suggest that you do.
But if you come across a dead body, what are you going to do?
You got to do something. Mm-hmm. Got to do something, and smart labels can help. Mm-hmm. So, that's what you get for doing an ad while you have a concussion. Mm-hmm. That does it. So if you want to go and be prepared for your holidays and for putting away all your holiday things once it's over and for remembering where you put Uncle Mel, then you can go to Smart Labels, their website, or you can go to Amazon. So easy. Go to Amazon. You know Amazon. Go there and just type in Smart Labels, one word. You're going to find these QR code stickers that are really wonderful. You take them off. You stick them on your boxes or on your bodies as toe tags or whatever. And you scan it into the app. You just say, Uncle Mel is under the couch again. And you take a picture of it. And then next year when you want to find Uncle Mel's skeleton, you just type in the app. You say, Uncle Mel, and it'll say under the couch. Mm-hmm. Show you the picture and everything. And that's a flawless use case.
Mm-hmm. We'll be ready for Halloween 2025. We'll put him out in the yard with his 9-foot brother. No one will be the wiser.
But his little hand, that big guy's hand, it'll be so cute. All thanks to our friends at Smart Labels. Okay, good. So that's another one in the can.
Cut and print.
Okay. Oh, I'm on the wrong thing here. Boop, boo. All right. Now I am emotionally prepared to tell you a ghost story.
Excellent. I'm going to go get a beer. Head?
Okay. Good. Yeah, add some alcohol in there. That'll be good.
Just the one. Just the one.
Okay.
As a treat.
Okay. It's a treat for you. Listen, if you do pass out, do you want me to call Amy or you just want me to let death take you?
No, it'll be fine.
Okay. Okay.
No, she's putting June to bed. I don't want to bother.
Oh, boy. You in t-shirt and shorts. Mm-hmm. It's almost Thanksgiving.
I know, right? Apparently, I live in the American South now.
Yeah. Congratulations. Mm. One of us.
I wouldn't say congratulations on that
one. I did code names yesterday, as you know, and it's most of the folks who do that are in Canada, and I had no fewer than three of them offer up their homes to me and my family if we wanted to escape. So now it's going to be like fun, like kind of Hunger Games style thing. Like, okay, which one of you wants us more? I don't know. Let's play this out. Okay. Ready to hear the ghost story?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Please keep me active here.
All right.
It's like a little paddle boat just goes coasting by.
Oh, man. All right, Patrick, here's a quick history of the town of York in Maine. Mm. The area was first settled by Europeans in 1624. Uh-huh. They named it Agamenticus.
Mmm. Okay.
Which is the Abenaki term for what we now call the York River.
Ah, okay. They're trying to be respectful.
Yeah, which one? They were European? Yeah, originally they were, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like, okay, you know, it'd be nice. We should name it after all those people we killed. That would be, it would be nice, I think. I think they would have wanted it this way.
They would have wanted it, yes, absolutely.
In fact, if I'm willing to bet that was probably what they also had called it. So, just, we don't want to.
This one's still alive. We could ask him. Nope. Kill that one. Oh, there he goes.
Oh, interesting. Oh, I mean, shoot. This is convenient because this way we don't have to make new road signs. So it's. We have to adjust the population number on the welcome to sign, but everything else.
Who remembers how to subtract?
Yeah. We just start to erase the numbers.
14 years later, in 1638, a whole bunch of people showed up there from Bristol, England.
Oh, sounds snobby.
Yep. And now they were like, no, this is called Bristol.
Why would you do that? That would be, I'm sorry. So confusing. Really? Honestly. So confusing. Now,
sorry, Bristol, England, or Bristol, America? Mm-hmm. The post office is just so confused. Mm-hmm. It's having such a hard time.
I keep trying to mail me mom back in Bristol, and you keep handing it back to me. Right, we're in Bristol.
Now, it is bad luck that all the street names here are also the same as all the street names back in Bristol, England. I understand.
But we're far too dense to think of new street names or a new street layout.
All right. So the Plymouth Charter, which basically gave Europeans the okay to settle pretty much, you know, anywhere in New England. Because all you need is for someone to be like, yeah, go do it. Yes,
it's cool. We all had dinner. It's totally fine.
That charter gave proprietorship of the entire area of Massachusetts, I'm sorry, of Maine, to a man named Sir that's not right. Sir, let me, this is wrong.
That's fine.
I want to make sure. I want to make sure that I give him.
Yeah. Lots of time.
Yeah, I thought it was. Okay. They gave the entire area over to a man named Sir Ferdinando Gorgeous.
Oh, now there's a man that chose a new name when he came to the New World. That's finally.
And just for kicks, would you like to see a picture of Sir Gorgeous?
I can't wait. Can't wait. Okay. I mean, it was a different time.
He's got the mustache.
It's true. Yeah, he's got the full beard. He's got the mustache. He's got a little bit of five head going on there. But, for the most part.
Look at those dewy eyes.
Yeah, they are pretty dewy. Yeah, probably conjunctivitis, I would imagine. but I mean, he owns all of Maine, so he's got
that going for him.
Yeah,
for sure. So he's in charge of all of Maine, and he decides to name the capital of his province Gorgiana.
Okay, never mind. I was wrong. So much opportunity. Did they just like not have the time or the energy?
No, there's no time. This is 1600s, man. Every second of your day is survival. Every single one is running away from a bear. You don't have time to think of names.
Dodging arrows and drinking water from a dirty river, and you know you're dead in like 10 days anyway. Like, this, I don't care what you call the town. I'm not going to see it.
I don't know. Make it my name, but something different like it. Gorgiana. I don't care. I don't care. On March 1st of 1642, King Charles I said, okay, that can be a real city. And so Gorgiana becomes the first incorporated city in all of America.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And after Gorgeous died, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was like, yoink! And they swoop in and they take Maine. And as you do when you take someone else's house, I guess. They rearranged a few things. Mm-hmm. One of the things they rearranged was the town of Gorgiana. Mm-hmm. They carve it up. And part of that city becomes a new town called York.
Okay. Where York comes in.
Here's where York comes into play. Now, the New Englander is very happy with themselves for for doing this all. But soon the people of New France, which is up in Canada mostly, mm-hmm. They're like, wait, hold on a second. That land is actually ours. And New England's like, oh, sorry, we have a charter, so go away.
Maybe you didn't see the piece of paper that we drew on. when we got sent here?
You a copy. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure we sent it to, oh no,
yeah.
New France, England.
Oh, fuck, we're back in Bristol again.
So New England's like, no, go away. And this leads to the French and Indian Wars.
Oh, that's what did it.
Yeah, that's one of several.
Okay.
Several right. things, I think. But those wrapped up by 1763. And, you know, we all know what happened to the Indians. So they're fine. Everyone, York is fine. Mm-hmm. Now, 30 years later, York is destroyed in the Candlemas Massacre of 1692.
Mm. Okay. Well, had a good run.
Pretty good.
So.
Pretty good. Since 17, I'm sorry, the French Indian War was wrapped up before 1763.
Yeah,
those numbers are transposed.
Okay,
I was doing this. I haven't done this in a while. This is a same day note taking.
Oh, I love these.
So just blaring through these things.
We're recording a day late, and even now.
Yep. That's fine. This was post lunch, pre meeting. I've got 30 minutes.
Love it.
Let's go. There was this was a raid. The massacre was a raid led by Chief Madakawanda and Father Louis Pierre Thierry, who they rode in the town. They killed 100 English settlers. They burned down all the buildings, and they took 80 people hostage and made them walk all the way back to Canada.
Oh goodness! Where
they held them for ransom. They got some money back, but not all the money they were hoping for, because on the way, many of them died.
Well,
so that was a bit of a bummer for York, but they rebuild, and by the time the 1700s come around, York becomes a thriving center of trade.
That's a tough rebuild argument right there. Like, there's nobody left.
No,
you know, I mean, it's this sounds like how they had to keep making Fantastic Four movies every couple of years.
They don't want to lose the rights to York.
They don't lose the rights to York. So I know,
but you're not going to like York.
The last one wasn't great. If the last York had issues, everybody died. Most of them wish they had died. But this next time, I think we got it. We're bringing in Roger Corman.
This guy is time. The mayor is going to be that kid from Whiplash. It's going to go pretty well. Roger Corman. Did he do the original one, mm-hmm. Roger Corman? Mm-hmm. I have never seen that. I've seen, you know, stills from it, but have you ever watched the movie?
I have not. I think it was on YouTube for a while. I don't believe it was professionally released. It
must
anywhere.
Be so bad. Anyway, so they rebuild. They've got, and there's lots of trade. It becomes a thriving trade center. They have they have wharves. They have great wharves everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Nice wharves.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of good trade happening, and all of which would continue until way after the Revolution. When Thomas Jefferson's Embargo Act of 1807 crippled trade and the city ground down to nothing. Which is pretty cool, because we get to experience that again pretty soon.
I can't wait to see how York survived it this time.
But this time we're taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
But that happens after our story. So anyway, we don't care about that. We are worried about the 1700s, and York is thriving. It's so great they even built the royal jail there.
Hey, all right.
Not every town gets the royal jail.
Mm-mm.
Lots of neat people lived in York about this time. One of them was a man named Abner Blaisdell.
Oh, what'd he do?
Well, we are going to get into that, but this is a good time to note. The first source I read about this today was said that this happened in York. And so then I was like, well, I'll do some York research. I did all this really good research that you've just heard. And then every other source was like, actually, it happened in Sullivan, which is a 5.5-hour drive away. But I'd already done all the research on York, so I didn't delete it.
Yeah, that's fine.
So we're actually not in York anymore. But I hope you learned something interesting.
I sure did.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. We're actually in Sullivan, Maine, pretty far away from York. let's see. Anyway, so in Sullivan on August 9th, 1799, Abner Blaisdell hears knocking noises coming from his cellar.
Okay.
Now, to his knowledge, there's nothing down there but like roots and stuff.
Right. Non-knocking things.
Not things that don't usually knock.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes down there.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't see anything out of the ordinary. So he's like, well, that's weird. Every once in a while, he'll hear more knocking. Every few days, he hears some knocking down from the cellar.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
This goes on for a few months. It's not until January 2nd of the year 1800 that Abner and his daughter Lydia both hear a woman's voice coming from the cellar.
Ah, okay. This is you know, the day after New Year's Day at the turn of the century. So sure, still a little hungover. Yeah. So
God, how did they get down here? Let me out.
It's entirely possible that this current series of knocks have been going on since yesterday, but like I was totally cashed out yesterday.
So drunk. The voice said, "I'm the dead wife of Captain George Butler, born Nellie Hooper."
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. A lot of our ghosts don't admit to being dead.
No, this one, you know? she knows who she is, and she's not hiding that. We celebrate her.
My only unfinished business is the door closed behind me on the way down. Very sorry. Just need to get up. Thanks so much.
If you could just scooch it open a wee bit. So this is Nellie Butler is who this ghost is. Now, this is surprising to hear for lots of reasons. But one of them is that Abner had actually known Nellie Butler when she was alive.
Oh.
And he was kind of confused about why her ghost was in his basement.
Hmm.
Now, Nellie's father, David Hooper, lived 5 miles away. So Abner was like, well, go get him. Let's go get him. Let's go bring him back.
Sure.
He should probably know this is happening. And so they go and they get Hooper, and Hooper's like, I don't think my daughter's ghost is in your basement, dude.
Yeah.
But he was still pretty curious.
Yeah. I'm not real busy either. So
yeah. So he's curious enough that even though it's January 2nd, it's snowing, it's northern Maine. He walks 5 miles through that to Abner's house to go check out the cellar. He goes down, he asks if the ghost is there. And the ghost says, yep, hello. Hooper would later write, quote, "She gave such clear and irresistible tokens of her being the spirit of my own daughter as gave me no less satisfaction than admiration and delight." So he's very excited to learn that the ghost of his daughter is haunting his neighbor's basement.
Yeah. I mean, he's still in a cellar. That's not great. But
no.
You know.
There are worse places.
Sure.
It's not a latrine.
Yet.
So they talk for a little while, they chat, and Hooper eventually is like, well, this has been great catching up. I guess I'll go home. Yep. And he leaves and goes home. Because what else are you going to do?
Yeah. He's like, and you still don't remember what the PIN number was? No? Fine. Okay. Think about it. I'll be back tomorrow. Just think. Try to remember.
I just found this lockbox, and it sounds so, like there's so much paper inside of it, and I would really like to open it up, and I just can't find the key anywhere. If you could please just remember where that key is. I have debts. So soon after Hooper leaves, Abner's son, Paul, comes running in from the fields, and he's scared out of his mind.
Hmm.
And he reported that he was just walking through the field, minding his own business, doing field stuff.
In when January? Suddenly,
and, like, yeah. Shut up. Stop asking questions. When all of a sudden he was being chased by a ghost that was floating behind him.
And I imagine he's probably a little confused whenever his dad is like, oh yeah, we've actually been talking to a ghost the entire time you've been out in the field. We even got neighbors to come and talk to the ghost.
Yeah. Yeah. His dad basically said like, oh, don't worry. This is our friend, Nellie.
Yeah. Not a big deal. So she's Paul doing some laps. She's been in the cellar for a long time.
Stretching those legs for sure. That evening, Nellie scolded Paul for not speaking to her when he saw her.
It's fair.
So now it's winter in Maine, 1800, as I noted. So when people start hearing about Nellie's ghost, they are so excited to have something to do. And people come from all over town and start jamming themselves into Abner's cell to see this ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And the ghost is not disappointed. She's not a shy ghost.
Okay.
One female witness described her presence thusly, quote, "At first, the apparition was a mere mass of light. Then it grew into a personal form about as tall as myself. And the glow from the apparition had a constant tremulous motion. At last, the personal form became shapeless, expanded every way, and then vanished in a moment."
Oof.
So Nellie's a real deal.
So who does this remind you of? You know, bored town, ghost that has no problem performing publicly for people. Is this,
We back to the Bell Witch?
I think we're back to the Bell Witch here. I'm getting a lot of Bell Witch vibes.
All right, someone go get a cat.
Ask her what the lottery numbers are. Two towns over. I can still make it by dawn.
So people are going nuts for Nellie. And that got a little overwhelming for the ghost. So she disappeared for a few months. Mm. Now people are so disappointed when this happens. But in May, she reappears in front of 20 witnesses in Ebner's cellar.
Wait. How long have they been in the cellar?
Listen, they're coming every day. Again, I cannot stress this enough. Yeah. Winter in northern Maine, the year is 1800. Everyone is going to Ebner's cellar every day now for months, hoping that a ghost will appear. And she does, and that's very exciting. And so Ebner now takes this opportunity to finally ask her a question that's been weighing on his mind, which is, why are you in my cellar? Yeah. But specifically, he asks, not like, what are you doing here? He says, why don't you move upstairs where more people could see you? Yeah, and there's more space.
Yeah.
And Nellie replies.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's been complaining about the cellar, and I'm trying to explain to them, it's a cellar. This isn't, it's not for entertaining. There's no lights down here.
There are no couches.
Yeah.
We didn't bring the record player down. Nellie replies that she wants to stay in the cellar because she doesn't want to scare any more children. So she's a very thoughtful ghost.
It's fair.
All right. Head check. How you doing? How's your concussion? Okay. Okay. Looks good. About the same. That one looks that. Okay. So the right one's getting a little dilated. So
that's good. That's fine. Yeah. That's supposed to be.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I think it's supposed to.
Okay. I don't know.
We'll check in on it later.
They're different sizes. And that doesn't seem good.
No,
all right.
No, they both feel good.
Okay. I don't know if someone with a serious concussion would have the mental wherewithal to make that judgment. Serious
concussion. It's a, entry-level concussion.
Okay. All in all, more than 100 people saw or heard the ghost of Nellie Butler. A lot of them went and they told the local pastor. Anytime they would see her, they would go tell the local pastor that they saw her. The local pastor's name, Reverend Cummings. And the Reverend doesn't believe in ghosts, and he gets pretty mad, actually, that everyone else does believe in ghosts.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. He doesn't think his flock should be following ghosts. Mm-hmm. So he's going to go over there, and he's going to put an end to this. So one day he stomps over to Abner's house, but on his way, he stopped by a sudden and surprising appearance of a woman. And later he would write, "Surrounded by a bright light, at first her form was no bigger than that of a toad."
Okay.
So she starts small. She's not out of the house often. It takes a little bit of time to get acclimated. But as he watches, Nellie grows to normal height, right in front of his eyes. So she's teeny tiny, and then she just gets big.
Huh.
And Reverend Cummings is like, oh, okay, you are a ghost. Yeah. Okay, I'm good. And she's like, thank you. Yes. So she's convinced him, and all is good.
Okay.
All is well.
Yeah.
So all this is going on, and at some point, people were like, Nellie, what are you doing here? why are you in Abner's basement? And Nellie was like, oh, yeah, right. And so she asks for someone to send for her husband, George, because she has a message for him, and that's why she's come back.
She's
got a little distracted.
Yeah.
For 4 months.
playing Ant-Man, doing shrink and grow all over the place.
So George comes over. And he says, hello, Nellie. She says, hello, George. And Nellie says to him, I came to tell you something. I think you should marry that Lydia girl.
Oh, okay.
Now, George is like, but Nellie, she is 15 years old, and I am 29, and I don't know about that. And Abner's standing there, and he's like, also, that's my daughter. So I don't think I like that. And Lydia is also standing there, and she's like, wait. What? I don't think so. No, thank you. But Nellie's ghost is adamant. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, listen, you're perfect for each other. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is like, Nellie, I don't think so.
Still really gross.
Still really gross. It's not really working here. But Nellie insists that it's God's will that George marry Lydia.
Okay. Old Testament God.
Yeah. Yeah, sure is. So Nellie says, like, you know, she is in touch with God, being a ghost and all, and this is what he wants. This is what she's there for, to share the news, share the good news that he wants George to bang a 15-year-old. And so Lydia is like, I don't really want to marry George. Mm-hmm. And everyone tells her to stay out of this.
It doesn't involve you.
So they kind of leave it alone, but like Nellie keeps bringing it up. Every time George comes to see her, she tells him, hey, you have to marry Lydia. Yeah. God really wants you to do this. And he's just like, please stop saying this to me. It's very uncomfortable, but she keeps at it. And she insists he has to do it. So like eventually, I assume just like to get her to shut up about it, George is like, okay, fine, I'll marry Lydia. And Lydia says, wait, what? No. And then they were married at Butler Point on May 28th, 1800.
Okay. Right. It's a short series of events here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. January 2nd, she arrives. May something.
May 28th.
Yeah. She turns her dead fiance into
her husband. The very next day, Nellie appears again. And now she tells George, quote, be kind to your wife, for she will not be with you long. She will have but one child and then die.
And she's like, I'm still standing right here. This is...
and so now, suddenly, no one really knows what to make of Nellie's ghost anymore. Because now it's getting concerning. Mm-hmm. Some people are accusing Nellie's ghost of placing a curse on Lydia and George. Like leading them into a trap.
Sure. Because
it's like, hey, this was your idea. Yeah. You can't just like force them to do this and then be like, well, now you're cursed. Other people though in town were like, you guys, it's not, you idiots. It's not actually Nellie's ghost. It's an evil demon disguised as Nellie's ghost.
Oh, that makes more sense.
That becomes a going theory for a while. Mm-hmm. Now for her part, Nellie, she was pretty chill about all this. She's just like, hey man, it's God's will. I don't know what to tell you. Mm-hmm. And she continues to appear for the next several months. She starts popping up outside the cellar more and more often. And this seems to be because a lot of people were now wondering if this was some sort of trick that Abner and Lydia were playing to get George to marry her.
Mm, okay.
Right, so now we're back to Bellwitch style.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
But now the ghost is popping up all over town, like with no one else around. So people are like, oh, okay. I guess it is a ghost or a demon. Mm-hmm. It is a ghost.
Not bothering me currently, so who am I to say? All right.
Well, Lydia, you're off the hook. In the middle of August, the ghost was bopping around a field, and there were 48 people there watching. So she just has this entourage everywhere she goes, and people were like, wow. And suddenly, Nellie Butler just felt so exhausted by the whole thing, and she said, you know what? I'm out.
Hmm.
She vanished into thin air. And she's never seen again.
Whew. Okay.
In 1801, 10 months after she and George were married, Lydia did indeed die in childbirth.
Well, that's like a coin flip at that time, though.
Well, that's how Nellie Butler died.
Yeah.
The baby didn't survive either. Nellie's horrible prophecy had come to pass.
Oof.
And that is the story, my friend, of Nellie Butler, who is, in fact, the first American ghost.
Huh. Wow.
She's the first recorded ghost in America.
Hmm.
And that's her whole deal.
Good for her.
Isn't
it? Real trailblazer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like smashing through that glass ceiling. Gosh, we're about 35 minutes because you have a concussion and haven't been making too many jokes. So we have got about 15 minutes now to vamp. What do you want to talk about? Actually, I guess this works out pretty well because we're going to go record a ghosty after this, aren't we?
Why don't we do that?
You feeling good? You feeling okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. You look sweaty. You okay?
I am sweating a lot, aren't I? Weird.
Yeah, that shorts and t-shirt combo is really...
It's really hot in here. Should it be this hot?
All right. Well, listen, folks, sorry for the shorter episode, but we're going to get Patrick to a doctor and see how that goes.
No.
Okay.
Maybe a witch doctor.
That'd be fun. I'm going to go text Amy real quick. Mm. And hopefully we'll see you again next week. And, you know, if you're listening, if you've been listening for a long time, keep an eye on our social media because there may be a call for emergency guest host duties, permanent guest host duties, depending on how the rest of the night goes for Patrick. This is it's nope. Wait a minute. Let's try that again. This has been, is this a ghost? That syntax can't, that
this,
can be done better.
This right? has been, is this a ghost? Yeah. That's just,
this
murder.
Has been
absolute
this
murder.
Is, there's someone in my school who now has been, he's very helpful. Like every 2 weeks I'll do a podcast, short episode just for faculty and staff, just kind of news updates and things.
Oh,
yeah. And he's got a great radio voice and he's got this presentation. Mm. But the thing I find so strange at the end of it, I'm not going to share his name. I'll use my name in his place. Mm. It's not me though doing this. Do you understand?
Yeah, yeah, you've said that.
But he, he ends it by saying, I have been Clayton Smith. And I always get so, it makes me think so much.
Yeah.
Well, you have been, mm-hmm. aren't you still?
Yeah.
Won't you continue to be? I don't know.
Am I supposed to be anticipating you next week? Like,
yeah.
Are you going through some
incredible metamorphosis that I should know about? We have to work together. We have deadlines that depend on you. Anyway, so this is this a ghost? Mm-hmm. That doesn't work either.
Nope.
Thank you for listening to Is This a Ghost? This is a show, a production of Smith Show Media. The notes this week were taken very hastily by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were told very drowsily by Patrick Dean. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our social media managers are Kai Valonis and Sam Murdoch. And we're going to go get Patrick to a hospital. So, if you want to be Patrick's replacement, we may have an opening coming up soon.
Or maybe next week. I will be the next ghost on Is This a Ghost?